right, my friends. Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show on the Temporary Limited Constitutional Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Scott Horton, and my guest this hour is Linda Schrock Taylor. She writes for one of my very favoritest websites in the whole wide world. I hope she can come on and correct my grammar here. LouRockwell.com is where she writes. She's a former government school special ed teacher and a private tutor, and I learned she's just recently moved from Michigan to Auburn, Alabama, home of the Ludwig von Mises Institute. Is that right, Linda?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, that's great. So are you setting up a private tutor-teacher clinic there in Alabama?
Well, eventually I plan to, but right now I'm back teaching in the public schools, special education teacher.
Okay, which brings us to the very important question of the day, which is what they call full inclusion. Now, my best understanding is that there are a couple of United States district courts have ruled to mandate something called full inclusion. So it's not necessarily nationwide, but they're basically pushing the special ed kids into the regular classes. But Ms. Taylor, I know that as a special ed teacher, your focus has always been on getting the kids back into the regular classes. So why are you so opposed to full inclusion?
Well, I'm opposed because getting the kids back to the regular ed, I want them to learn their way back into regular education. This program, this plan, this FAD, just throws the children back in. All disabilities, all levels of competency or incompetency are to be put into the regular classroom with the regular students and stay there all day. The special ed teachers will not be pulling them out for tutoring. They're supposed to help them within the classroom during the day. And I'm just very sure that will set the children up to fail, and the children don't want it to happen.
Mrs. Taylor, when you say all levels, what you mean the most retarded children are going to be in the regular science class?
Correct. As well as medically fragile children with severe behavior problems. They're just trying to, the National Board of School Board, Association of School Boards are really behind this because they're pretending that it's going to be a way to save money, which it won't, because they're going to find out as the pendulum in American education continues to swing that they'll end up getting hit in the head and have to end up putting two teachers in every classroom instead of one. One special ed teacher, one regular ed teacher. And still, they put a special ed teacher in, maybe who's trained for working with the blind, and then there are medically fragile children there, and I just cannot imagine how it will work.
You know, you wrote an article where you talked about your brother, I believe, was deaf, and how your family had to fight so hard to get special ed classes created so that he could really get an education, and now they're undoing everything your family fought for.
Right. Right, and we spent our childhood watching our parents at school board meetings and rallying groups and doing anything possible to try to get a classroom open for deaf children in Ypsilanti, Michigan. And now these people are just in one fell swoop wanting to sweep away everything that had been accomplished.
Well, you know, I'm sure their argument is a very egalitarian one, that you know, it's not fair to put kids on the short bus and make them go to a class at the other end of the school where they're separate from all the other kids and that sort of thing. Is it not hurtful to have children separated away from the rest of the kids like that?
Well, the children I work with are basically all of normal or very near normal intelligence, and they do not want it to happen because
they... All right, hold it right there, Linda. It's
okay.
Weekend Interview Show, guys. We'll be right back. Okay, well, I guess that bumper music doesn't really fit the topic of this interview that well, but, you know, usually we're talking foreign policy up here. all right, Linda Schrock Taylor, she writes for LouRockwell.com. She's our guest, and she teaches special ed kids in government school. And right before the break there, actually too close to the break, I asked you, well, what about the idea that it's mean or wrong or hurtful to the special ed kids to give them their own little school bus and put them on the other end of the school away from the rest of the kids.
Well, most of these special ed children are transported right along with all the other children. I'm not sure how many of the little buses are left. The ones you generally see are Head Start buses collecting the little preschoolers. My students arrive right on the regular bus with everyone else. And to think that it is cruel for them not to be allowed is following a wrong path of thinking. The children have been identified as special education children, and as such, they need specific instruction. Deaf children need instruction in sign language and massive amounts of language and speech development. Blind children need to learn how to read with Braille and learn mobility with their cane so that they can get around. All the children have different specific needs that our country for 50 years has forced special ed teachers to take all of these classes and gain all of these skills and all of these techniques to teach these children, that now this fad that's not required by law is undoing the whole apparatus that once had us in the situation where we could remediate and then send children back to the regular classes.
And not by law, as our previous guest pointed out, it's judge-made law, right?
Just in a couple of cases. And from what I am reading and from 25 years in the field plus all the years at home, it violates the IDEA, the Individual Disability Education Act, the special education law. This thing violates special education law when schools like the one I'm currently working in make a blanket statement that all special ed kids will be fully included next year and you're not allowed to pull them out of class. Because the special ed laws say the decisions have to be made for each individual child by an individual education planning committee based on the child's need for education.
Wait, did you say the word individual was in a law somewhere?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow, I'm surprised that they even recognize there's such a thing as an individual anymore. So that's the law that they're breaking, is they're saying, no, all special ed kids are one, and this is where they're going.
Yes. Yes, no, and I'm sure this spring is going to be interesting because when we write IEP goals, I suspect we'll be under fairly heavy pressure to change the IEP, which used to read that the child needed so many hours in special ed to gain skills and speech and language and mobility and all these things, that suddenly a miracle has occurred and these kids can just go and do the regular classroom and with a little bit of modification should be just fine. I mean, it's a pipe dream. It isn't going to happen. Even with my students who I have so far towards full inclusion that some of them I only see 45 minutes a day, half hour a day, they don't want me in those classrooms yet next year. They've already told me, don't come in there and help us. It would be embarrassing in front of our friends. And let's go back to when we were children. No matter whether they named the reading groups the bluebirds or the robins or the canaries, we all knew which one was the slow group, didn't we?
Sure.
And which children did not do well in school.
Yeah,
well,
and being stuck in one of those groups, it's you can never catch up. In fact, I think this is from a Bart episode of The Simpsons. Bart Simpson said, so wait a minute, we're going to catch up with the other kids by going slower than them?
Right.
And once you're stuck in that group, now how are you ever supposed to be in the canaries or whatever it is?
That's right. It becomes a life sentence if you don't have teachers who really focus on getting kids out.
Well, and worse, they even tell you, look, if you don't do good in fifth grade, well, then you're not going to get into pre-algebra in sixth grade. And if you don't get into pre-algebra in sixth grade, then you're not going to be finished with algebra by the end of eighth grade. And then you're not going to be able to get into calculus. And then you won't be able to go to college. And, you know, they tell you very young that if you don't have this or that marker passed by the time you're still a young kid, that, oh, you're on the path of destruction now. There's nothing going to be done for you now.
That's right. And it's like in England where they give the 11-plus exams and they decide, based on the results of those exams, whether the students will be allowed to go on to a high school or whether those students will just be in, our professor over there always used to say, in the classes to become a dustbin man. And a friend of mine was ill the day the tests were taken, and the test found that he was rather retarded and not expected to do well in life. So he was shifted into all of these remedial classes.
Oh, my God. And so there was no fixing it. He couldn't just say, hey, I was sick.
No, he was stuck all the way through school in those low classes. And but because he studied on his own at night, he took college exams, passed them, and he has two master's degrees. And I met him in a master's program in England. But his whole life he had been labeled as one of the ones who did so poorly on the 11-plus exam.
Yeah, you got to keep them tonsils healthy. No telling what might happen if you miss a day at school.
And so, you know, we can deal with it lightheartedly, but when the rubber hits the road, we're going to have children in placements that, number one, do not meet the need of the special ed child to be educated. They may meet the district's need to have kids in the placements that they want to force, but we're supposed to think individually in terms of the educational needs of the child. And on the flip side of it, we're going to have regular education children sitting there waiting while special ed teachers come in and out and advise and rewrite tests and modify materials and tutor and do all these things in the classroom while the regular child may very often have downtime waiting for things to proceed.
Sure, and the medium kids are just sitting there and they have nothing to do with anything. Nobody pays any attention to them at all.
Right, I call those the falling through the crack kids.
Yeah, the large end of the bell curve are the ones
right.
who fall through the cracks, yeah.
Right.
So this full inclusion thing is really going to be a disaster, is what you're saying.
Yes, that's what I predict. It will be a disaster. One time I was at a meeting, and one of the new things was coming out, and I said to the speaker, you know, this isn't even logical. He said, I know, but it's American education, and the pendulum swings right to left. All I can advise is step back, or it will hit you in the head.
Yeah, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it'll do as long as it's being run by the state, is it'll hit you.
Yes, because they will go totally based on the pressure from the Federal Department of Education, pressure from state departments of education, and running with a fad. And we had a meeting, a special ed meeting the other night, and not one mention was made of how this fad is going to be in direct violation of the IDEA special education laws. The individual education laws, because those call the IDEA law requires, demands a continuum of services so that I can have a deaf kid an IEP and I can say, well, let's see, you know, he could go to regular gym with an interpreter because he's quite athletic and he could do this with regular children and this, but I need him the bulk of the day to develop language, build language that was not even gained in preschool years, and to do all these things, or he will never be ready for social studies or science or anything. And so we look at the alternatives, or maybe it's a child who is so deaf and having so many difficulties that the placement best for his needs will be at the residential state school for the deaf. And that's okay. I taught at the Colorado School for the Deaf, and it was great. We had wonderful programs. We had kids go on to Gallaudet College in Washington, D.C. So we're supposed to have a continuum of programs.
So what's going to happen instead, though, is instead of you getting them in your hands where you can make sure that they're proficient in language before you send them on, they're basically going to be stuck in social studies class before they can even read what the assignment is.
Right.
And reading is the basis for all this, right? Now, what are the ages of the kids that you teach, Linda?
Right now I'm teaching K through 6.
Okay. And, I mean, this is the kind of thing where if you don't really learn how to be able to read, you know, comfortably and quickly to yourself by that time, you're going to have a real hard time for the rest of your education. They're not going to teach you how to read anymore. You're already past that point.
Correct. Especially third grade is what we call the killer year. It's the year when you should stop learning to read and start reading to learn.
Right.
And so kids get swamped there. Now, when I can bring them to my class and I can do Spalding and we can move quickly without them being embarrassed by their friends, most of my students now, I think actually all but one, plus one little developmentally delayed fellow who hasn't really started a real reading program, have made 2 to 4 years of reading gain during the first semester.
All right, really?
But I can't do that in the regular classroom because
I'm surprised you can do that at all at a government school. It seems like someone would be in there to stop you to tell you you're doing your job.
Oh, well, they try. And now it's, I've heard the gossip from the school that I left. I was teaching this reading program there, and my special ed kids were learning to read and flying out of my room. And the other teachers, I would say, you know, would you, are you interested? No, I'm not interested. So I was home at Christmas time, and I was told the teachers are now saying, well, we were really interested in Linda's reading program, but she was so selfish, she would never share any of her techniques.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, unless we went to the learning clinic for $50 an hour. And I never even offered services for adults. They just came and watched for free anytime they wanted to learn. So
oh, yes.
It's they're always against you to try to keep you from being successful.
Yeah, well, and I'm surprised they're even willing to grant you that your reading program is better than theirs at all.
Only after I left.
Right. and only with the spin that you were too selfish to share.
Right,
it.
Right.
Yeah, nice. Okay, so, well, how about this? How about I put my arms out in front of me, and I use my I Dream of Genie powers, and I magically erase every government school in America. And all the people across the country turn to Linda Schrock Taylor and say, all right, some guy got rid of all the schools. What do we do now? You think about your answer to that question, Linda, while we take this break, and we'll be right back. It's a weekend interview show. We're talking with Linda Schrock Taylor from LouRockwell.com. Alright everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and my website is weekendinterviewshow.com. If you go there, you can download or stream the archives of any of my previous interviews in MP3 format, all free of charge for you, weekendinterviewshow.com. And also, I just started writing for antiwar.com. Should have another piece up there in a day or two, and probably as soon as I get home, I'm going to start working on my piece about last hour's interview with William Norman Grigg. But for right now, we're talking with Linda Schrock Taylor. She teaches special ed at a government school in Auburn, Alabama, home of the Ludwig von Mises Institute. And she writes for LouRockwell.com, L-E-W-Rockwell.com. You can find her archives there. And Mrs. Taylor, before the break, I asked you, what would you do if I was had I Dream of Genie powers and made all the government schools in America just vanish? And the entire country turned to Mrs. Taylor and said, okay, lady who knows all about teaching and reading and stuff, what do we do? What's your suggestion?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that because a year ago at the Austrian Scholars Conference at the Mises Institute, I presented a paper called Extramural Education, an Interim Plan. And in there I laid out a plan and for exactly what to do. My thinking began because a school in Traverse City, Michigan had a major crisis where a brand new school did not meet specifications and snow load was bringing this new school down. So they had to close the schools and make alternate plans. Within days, that community had this grade in the Baptist church and that grade in the Methodist church and had the children back in school in the shortest possible time. And I started thinking, first thing I would do, I have two books going around in my head and I will get to them eventually, is to write a manual for local mayors, fire chiefs, whoever would be in a position to have to react to what many would see as a crisis and people like us would see as a gift. And how they could, in the interim, is to use facilities in their neighborhood and go with the smallest neighborhood possible. I was thinking in the communities in the rural areas, maybe we could even get a hold of some of those old schoolhouses. In the cities, I'm thinking to organize around the fire halls since they seem to be fairly evenly distributed through the communities and start local schools. Local schools using all kinds of local talent. Senior citizens who know how to read well is let them come in, is everybody bond together to create a school system for an interim time that will allow the free market the time to get in there and get schools created to give us more alternatives for private schooling.
So and, this is the Ludwig von Mises free market answer to education.
That's mine. That is mine. I went to one-room schoolhouse. And it was such a wonderful learning experience. I wish every child could do that. And so I think the answer is to stop with the federal and state levels intruding into local public schools. And let
so you'll take a government school as long as it's strictly locally controlled.
Well,
so.
I don't want any government higher than the local.
At all, anyway.
Right.
Okay, yeah, you're like me.
Yeah, no, I mean, it would be, the school boards would be like when my grandpa would take his turn on the school board. You know, it wasn't a power-mongering decision. It was a, I have a responsibility to serve my community. I will serve on the board for 2 years, and then, Harry, you next door, you take it next time. And they had wonderful schools because every family had a vested interest in the schools and in the children there. I think if we can get as small as possible and have no federal and state laws and have the people decide what they want for the children of their community.
You know, I think the biggest criticism of homeschooling and real small private schools like that is socialization, they say. But you have to, your kid has to be exposed to all kinds of people all the time at a young age, or else they're going to grow up and live in their mom's basement and never do anything.
I think it's completely the other way. I am in those schools, and I do not want my son socialized to that culture. There's a young homeschool boy who writes, I forget where he writes, and he said he and his dad solved that problem of socialization, that just a couple times a day his dad drags him into the bathroom and beats him up, and then they, you know, have had their socialization lessons for the day.
Yeah. Hey, you can't wear a hat, and you can't wear that shirt, and you better call me sir. All right, you socialized? All right, now sit down and read your science.
Right. Pull those pants up. Of course, that's my hue and cry through the halls nowadays. Get those pants up. It's a prison fashion. Why do you want to look like that?
Well, and, you know, that really is a big part of a problem with education, perhaps, is that really being smart isn't cool.
No, it wasn't when I was in school.
It wasn't when I was. Maybe I'm old enough now that I ought to say, well, at least when I was in school. It wasn't too long ago. I probably could have just guessed that I'm still close enough, but... But no, when I was in school, it's definitely not a cool thing to get a 100.
No. When I was in school, which I'm sure was long before you were in school, the pressure was on that the boys would become the engineers and the doctors, and the girls would become the teachers and nurses. And those of us who had maybe higher expectations in life were discouraged rather quickly to stay within our realm. So there's so much harm from peers. We have been so happy that we made the decision to homeschool because we are raising our son, not a peer group. We are raising our son. And socialization, we don't see him much. He is busy. He has a job as one of the two mechanics at a large shop that sells four-wheelers and mini bikes and all that.
All right, hold it right there, Mrs.
Okay. Taylor.
We'll be right back, everybody. It's the Weekend Interview Show on the Limited Constitutional Republic Broadcasting.
You're listening
Network.
To the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and we're talking with Linda Schrock Taylor. She writes for LouRockwell.com about good education and not so good education. And we're talking about homeschool a little bit. I'd like to ask you, Ms. Taylor, whether you have any recommendations for people about good resources for homeschooling, people who've been considering getting their kids out of government school, but they're not sure that they can afford to do so on their pay scale or that kind of thing.
Well, I have written several articles on the topics. They could do a look through my archives. I really suggest that if people want to homeschool, but it seems to be impossible because of needing to work, that they enlist family members. I especially wrote an article about the grandparents helping out and tapping into other generations who can help be with the children during the day and teach the subjects they know, and parents fill in the evening. It can become a family thing, and I think that's better all the way around, because then the children are socialized to multi-generational family values, not stuck, you know, just with one. A Google search will bring up all kinds of homeschooling groups and newsletters, people who sell products for homeschooling.
They really do work really hard to keep it affordable and make it the kind of thing that anybody can do, don't they?
Yes. And Kathy Duffy has a brand new book out. She wrote Government Nannies. And she has a new book called 100 Great Tips for Homeschooling Curriculum, I think it is. And she evaluates different kinds of curriculum and suggests different things. So that would be a good resource to look for.
Okay, good idea. And, you know, maybe this is out of order, but say that you had an old friend or family member listening right now and you were trying to convince them to get their kids out of government school. What's your best argument for why they ought to go ahead and make a change to either private or homeschooling?
The argument that would hold the most weight with me as a parent, and that did, was having someone point out to me that a peer group with television, immediate gratification, and poor value system, that group was raising my child, not me. And I think people do not realize how infective the poor values and the suggestions and the ideas are in the public schools. I spend so much time in my room on teaching harmful things that have been taught in other rooms. And parents just are not aware of how insidious those things are. We pulled David out after fifth grade, and he had spent half of his career in a public school and half in a private school to that point. And we still have many things about him that we were not able to unschool. And we are so sad that we ever let him go to school in the first place. The damage is deep, and the damage is long-lasting.
There's something that you kind of brought up there about some of the ideas that get conditioned into the kids. It seems like, you know, if you're a conservative Christian type, then you really get kind of bugged out about all the secular humanism and world citizenship and all that kind of brainwash that they put on kids. But at the same time, you know, you talk about pendulum swinging kind of thing. You have, I think, a lot of you know, nationalist kind of flag-waving, pro-war kind of sentiment in government schools as well. It's sort of a, you know, I guess the pendulum swings between those two different brands of collectivism?
Yes. Yes. And our children get caught in the middle of that. When we moved David to the Christian school, hoping to get him away from a lot of that, all of a sudden we get a letter home that DARE will be offered in the private school. DARE is a program that every study I have seen has shown that it has no value. It has not stopped drug usage. My older teens report that it taught them about drugs they had never heard of and might never have heard of.
Right. It's true. That's the first time I ever saw drugs was the cops passing around the bags of it and explaining that, you know, if you were to have this and sell it, you could make a lot of money.
Right. And we did not want David in the DARE program. I also believe, like Claire Wolf, that it's trying to train a group of little brown shirts, because they're always saying, you know, if there's anything going on in your home with mommy and daddy that worry you, feel very comfortable to tell us, you know,
express
your concerns.
Yes,
oh, yeah, I've sat in and listened to it and have little deaf child or hard of hearing raise their hand going, my mom and dad smoke that funny stuff at home. Aha, got one. And so we figured David's not going to be involved in that. So we get the letter.
Well, we're here to help. We're here to put you in foster care and put your mom on welfare and put your dad in prison. Thanks for telling us that your dad sits on the couch and smokes pot when he gets home from work instead of drinking a martini, which would be perfectly okay.
Correct. Well, when David, I wrote a letter back to school. I said he is not allowed to attend DARE. And so you have to do something different. And they take them 18 class sessions. So the children lose a lot of academic time.
18 class sessions?
That's
oh, wow.
It was
just one when I was in junior high. I think they came for 1 hour or something.
Oh, it's long. It's ongoing, and then they have a huge graduation in the gymnasium at the end of it, and all the children are given Dear T-shirts.
And they all smoke pot by ninth grade anyway.
Oh, you bet. So here's what they gave my son to do, since I wouldn't allow him to go to Dear. And there was another set of parents who had the same thing. So David and this other boy were forced to go to the library during all of these sessions, and they had to write a report on why guns are bad.
Oh, nice.
And that's at the private Christian school. And so from there, we went to homeschooling. I said, I don't need this. And reading rates are so bad in America. It's up to like 3/4, I think, but I don't have my statistics right readily handy. And the kids are not learning to read in America.
I saw something not too long ago on C-SPAN where, and I suppose I could have Googled this and to double check it, but the guy said that 6% of American adults read a book a year. And that's where a book is classified as a self-help book or a Harlequin romance novel. 6% of adults read a book a year.
That's probably true. Those of us who read are the ones who keep Borders and Amazon and everybody busy. But the majority of the population does not. When I taught freshman reading classes at a state university, I always took a survey the first night and know about how many books do you own, how many do your parents own, how many have you read. And at least half of my students had never read a book. And they were freshmen in college, accepted into these programs. And then when I tested their reading, most of them were at third, fourth, and fifth grade reading level.
A friend of mine told me yesterday that a girl asked him, where's he from? And he said, I'm from New Jersey. And she said, is that a state?
That's the type of stuff that's
and
coming out of
college. College. This was a 22-year-old, you know, upper-middle-class young white girl from the West Side.
It is appalling. And a lot of parents write to me and say, well, you know, I really would like to homeschool, but I'm not a certified teacher. And I dropped out of school because I hated what they were giving me. I don't know that I can do it. And I tell them, you can do it. No one can care more about your child than you. And no one can want more for your child than you. And when I teach, even my children who are retarded, I teach them to read and then I pound into their heads. When you have children, do not wait for a public school to teach your child to read. Teach them yourself as I have done. And they do. They bring their little ones back to me and they have those children reading. Parents can do it. They do not need to be certified. That's a game to keep the colleges all busy. And I know
the certification is all bogus anyway. You could have dropped out of every class in college and still get a teacher certificate.
And they have, now colleges are moving to a 5-year bachelor's degree to give you more things that you need to become a teacher. And then now I think some will have to be going to 6 years when I read of the only way to have inclusion, even pretend to work, is if regular teachers now are trained to be special ed teachers.
So they just mandate all this stuff to make, basically take up years of your life learning how to teach things that you really are not interested in teaching, just to teach the one thing that you're about.
Correct. The book I'm starting right now is Teacher Training for Homeschooling Parents and Victims of XYZero Skills Education Colleges. So I'm hoping to reach a lot of those people and methodically teach them how to teach so that they need not feel fearful of homeschooling.
You know, I got an email not too long ago from a guy who asked me, well, what's the handle? You know, if government is doing all this terrible stuff and we're supposed to be holding them to the Constitution, what's the handle? And my answer was, well, I don't really know. Maybe radio and writing. But, you know, the best we can really do as far as an actual handle on the national government that we can grab a hold of, it's the House of Representatives. And, in fact, the teacher certificate thing is what brought this up in my mind. I believe it was in 1999 or 2000. There was a Democratic congressman from California had sponsored a bill. It was going to be a national bill. We're far past the 10th Amendment meaning anything now. And this national bill was going to mandate that you would have to have a state teacher certificate in order to homeschool your kid. And he had 60 co-sponsors or something like that, and it had sailed through committee and was already on its way to the House floor when the networks of homeschool parents found out about it. And they all, and in fact, the way I read this article originally, when I read about this, they told each other specifically, don't email and don't phone, because they don't really care about that. What you have to do is send them a telegram, send them a fax, write them a letter, so that it piles up in real time and space in their office, and and just tell them, listen, if you make it a crime for me to homeschool my kid, I'm going to have nothing to do all day except stay home plotting the destruction of your political career. So go ahead and vote for it, pal. And the way it ended up was one guy, the guy who sponsored it, voted for it on the House floor. Everybody else took their name off of it. It was voted down 430-something to one. And that was because the people of the United States said to their congressman, absolutely not. And it was dead in the water. So we really do have a lot more power over our government than we imagine sometimes, I think.
Yes. Too many sit back and say, well, I'm just one person. You know, what can I accomplish? But I think that I've accomplished a lot just by ranting for 2.5 years at LRC and helping parents understand what the system is and how to get out of it and what you can do once you're out of it. Michigan has, they require certified teachers that the homeschooling parents be certified teachers unless you sign a form stating that you have a sincere religious belief that parents should not have to be certified teachers. And so when people contact me from Michigan, I remind them, look over that form carefully and sign and check that part. I checked it even though I'm a certified teacher because I do not believe parents need to be certified teachers. And it is just a game because I've heard that if you check that you don't believe they need to be, then the state won't come and bother you. So look your forms over, check into your state laws, and do not feel intimidated to decide that you're the parent. You have an obligation based on having that child to educate that child to the best of the ability. And you know the public schools aren't doing that. They're working further to dumb down, which will be another effect of the full inclusion, because if the special ed kids are going to make it at all, they're going to have to slow down everything in the classroom, and there we are back into dumbed down education.
Yep. The very same situation again. And you know, I'm sorry for the redundancy, but going back to really where this interview started was people had spent decades working to create special ed.
Right.
Just to have these no good Marxists basically come in and screw everything up.
Right. My parents started in 1955 to fight for education for my brother. So we have, you know, a half a century of parents now, and a lot of parents are not understanding what they're giving up. And once it's gone, it's gone. And they don't understand. They think the schools make it sound wonderful, this inclusion. Well, we were told at our meeting the other night that, you know, we need to be in the classroom helping the teachers. Well, I have students K through 6th grade, so I have 7 grades to try to be in at the same time to help students. That ought to be very interesting. The other thing is I was told that even though I'm certified K through 12 in deaf education and I've taught every subject that can be taught in school and every grade level, now I'm not qualified to teach basic math. I'm not qualified for anything. So I have to go in the other room, and I have to let the general ed teacher present the first lesson, the introductory lesson. I can then teach review lessons, but I'm not qualified to teach an introductory lesson.
Well, and all the studies show that if you have a teacher certificate, you're far less likely to be a good teacher than someone who just already has a degree in science, has a degree in English, has a degree in something, and gets a job as a teacher. They're always the better teachers, even on subjects that weren't their specialty in college.
Correct.
The people with the teacher certificates are basically the people who flunked out everything else for the most part.
Well, and the ones going for in teaching degrees now are in the very lowest part of the SAT scores.
Well, this
teaching isn't calling upon the right students. They're recruiting and getting the students with low SAT and ACT scores.
Well, that really has a lot to do with the pay, doesn't it? I mean, it used to be that the best and the brightest women would be nurses or teachers, like he said, when you were young. But nowadays, that's not the case. Nowadays, the best and the brightest women can go off and be terribly successful on their own, and it's the leftovers are the ones who end up being the teachers.
Correct. Correct. I've worked with teachers who hardly can read probably above a seventh grade level, but they made their degree. Grammar, I don't even go in the teacher's lounges because so often the grammar is so horrible that it just is offensive to this English teacher's ear, and I cannot stand to be in there, and I think, oh my goodness, what are we giving the children when the students can't even have a role model who speaks accurately?
Yeah, I think we really are just going to have to abolish the government schools one way or another. But see, here's the thing. I mean, I think back to my own existence. First time somebody told me, yeah, they ought to just abolish all government schools, I was actually even going to a private school at the time, and, you know, lucky me, and thought to myself, well, no, that's terrible, because, you know, that means everybody who aren't lucky enough to afford a private education are just out of luck. And it took me a long, long time to come around to the point of view where I really just think that all government schools should be totally abolished. What is it do you think that it really takes to get through to people's minds that there's only one solution to this problem, and that is just get rid of it?
I don't know. I think maybe pushing the idea for them to realize how much it costs to educate a child in public school versus the much smaller amount it costs to educate a child in a private school.
Hit them right in the pocketbook. That's where it counts. All right, everybody. Hey, it's the Weekend Interview Show. We'll be right back to wrap up with Linda Schrock Taylor, who writes for LouRockwell.com.
Don't take your guns to town.
My friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. It's the Limited Constitutional Republic Broadcasting Network. And I love Jews and Mexicans. I love them. Okay, now back to the show. Linda Schrock Taylor, she writes for LouRockwell.com. And she's a special ed teacher. She's working to be out of work,
yes.
As one of her columns says. Her job is to make herself completely obsolete, right?
Correct. Correct. That's been my goal for years.
That's right. Take those kids who are in the special ed who aren't up to speed with the rest of them and get them up to speed as opposed to working slower. Get them actually where they can fit right in to the regular classes of the kids their age.
Yes, and I call it remediate and release.
Yeah, there you go. See, she's even got a title for the program, guys. All right, now, you know, something else that you wrote that I thought was really interesting was called "If We Let Our Language Be Debased, We Erode Our Liberty." And it reminded me of 1984, George Orwell, where, hey, guys, have you seen the new edition of the 11th edition of the Newspeak Dictionary? Yeah, there's fewer words than ever in here.
Yes. Yeah, I understand German. I've had letters from readers in Germany. I get letters from countries all over. It's really interesting. But in Germany, they are doing exactly that. The government has rewritten the language, and now they know which words are not allowed anymore and which words are allowed, or maybe some invented ones. I'm not sure, as they try to control the speech of the country.
Yes.
I try to imagine,
you know, what it's like to be a ruthless master planner sort of person, but I just can't really imagine being so delusional as to think that you can legislate people's language.
Yes, or feelings or anything.
I mean, putting them in jail for something that they said, like, I could see that, but saying, like, okay, here's the rule, from now on, say this instead of that, you know, I don't know, it just seems so counterproductive to me. You know?
Right. Someplace I heard that it's either against the law or they're trying to make it against the law in France for the use of the word Walkman. But they can't think of a good word that takes the place of the word Walkman. So they've been having to deal with that issue as they fight American words and slang and names of products coming into their culture.
Which, you know, I can understand the cultural reaction to, you know, just the McDonaldization of your foreign culture. But I don't see how they're really going to be able to get away with using the state. But it just goes to show that, you know, they'd love to try. If they could get you to forget that there was ever such a word as liberty, they could take that out of the dictionary so that free only meant, you know, that this room is free of something, I think is the way Orwell talks about it in 1984. But it no longer means the ability to choose your own destiny. There's just no such thing as that word, so you can't think it.
Right. And if they can get all the parents to believe that full inclusion is a law, the parents won't fight as hard to force districts to admit that it's not a law and that these school boards and all have no right to violate special ed law and not offer a continuum of services. So how long before it gets turned around, I don't know, but I'm just sure hundreds and thousands of children will suffer until they realize they've made another bad decision.
All right, all you parents out there, you want to know what this lady writes. Her name is Linda Schrock Taylor. She writes for LewRockwell.com. That's LewRockwell.com. And some really great articles there. Linda Schrock Taylor, thank you so much for coming back on the show. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. That's been the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. I love Jews and Mexicans a lot. And my website is WeekendInterviewShow.com. And also I write for AntiWar.com. And I'll talk to you next week.